Okay, welcome back. Now, in the book of Genesis, we read how Abram was chosen to carry the baton of righteousness. We also read how that baton was passed on to the fourth generation. Now, recall from the beginning of this message, I spoke about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Levi, Jochebed, the mother of Moses. I read that so that you can see that between Abraham and Moses, you have four generations. Here's why this is important. To get a clear comprehension of this message, I will start with the story of Abram. Let's begin with Genesis 14, 1 through 15. Okay? And it reads, Abram rescues Lot, Genesis 14, verses 1 through 15. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elim, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bara, king of Sodom, and with Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shimber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, which is Zorah. All these were joined together in the valley of Siddim, which is the Salt Sea, or the Dead Sea. 12 years they serve Chedorlaomer, and the 13th year they rebel. Okay? And the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him and smote the Rephaims in Ashtoreth, Kerneim, and the Zuzims in Ham. Now, it's important, these names, I'm going to actually better define them later, okay? And the Emims, okay, and the Shiva, the Karathim, and the Horites, and their Mount Seir unto Elapharon, which is by the wilderness. And they returned and came to Emishpeth, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites that dwelt in Hazon-Tarma. And there went out the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Admah, and the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, the same as Zorah. And they joined battle with them in the valley of Siddim, with Chedorlaomer, the king of Elim, and with Tidal, king of nations, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Antioch, king of Elasar, four kings with five. Now you can read that for yourself, because I know it sounds confusing with all these names, and the pronunciation of them are kind of strange, but I want you to get the understanding of this. Now, before I go any further, I need to highlight a few key points. First, let's pay close attention to the nations mentioned in this chapter. We have the Rephaim, the Emim, the Zuim, the Horites, the Amorites, and the Amalekites. Okay, now, the Amalekites, this is a different Amalekites, because, you know, you had the Amalekites that were basically of the tribe of Esau, but Esau wasn't even born yet, because Isaac wasn't born, Jacob wasn't born. So if the Jacob wasn't born, you know, you don't have Esau, right? So the Amalekites were actually an old nomadic tribe that were in this land. Now, the reason why I mention them is that these groups are giants. These are descendants of the Nephilim. This connection means that the king of Gomorrah and the king of Adma, the king of Zeboam and the king of Bela, right? They were actually adversaries of Yahuwah, right? You got to think about that now. Now, the Horites and the Amorites, when you do a study, it talks about how these were actually mighty, renowned men. So this is pretty much a nation of giants, okay? And it reads, and the vial in the veil of Siddim was full of slime pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there. And they that remained fled to the mountain, and they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all the victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, and dwelt in Sodom and his goods and departed. Okay, I'm sorry about that. And they took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom and his goods and departed. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Anar, and these were confederate with Abram. Okay, now listen to what happened. Lot has been kidnapped. He is taken by the kings of Babylon. Okay, Shinar, right? And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants born in his house, his own house, 318, and pursued them into Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them and pursued them into Hubah, which is on the left hand of Damascus, right? And he brought back all the goods and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods and the women also and the people. All right. Now, the next chapter is very, very, very interesting, which is one of the inspirations I had for doing this message. Okay. It's very important. Abram blessed by Melchizedek. This is chapter 14, 17 through 24. This continues to chapter 14. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Shaveah, which is the king's dale. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, right? King of Jerusalem, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine. He was the priest of the Most High, right? God. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand. And he gave him tithings of all. See, now Abram gave him tithings, right? And the king of Sodom said unto Abram, give me the persons and take the goods to thyself. Now, this is very important you understand, because there's a lot going on here, okay? And Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have left up mine hand unto the Lord, which who is Yahuwah, the Most High, Elyon, God, El, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from the thread even to a shoelace, right? That will not take anything that is thine, lest thou should say, I have made Abram rich, saying only that which the young man, save only that which the young men have eaten and the portion of them, right, portion of the men which went with me, Anir, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portions. Okay, now, This is a crucial part of the message, as we need to understand why Abram refused to accept anything from Sodom. Okay? It should be obvious, but I just want to reiterate it. Why he refused to accept anything from Sodom. Here we see three distinct forces at play. Or at this time, we have like, there's three forces that we have to pay close attention to. Okay? You have the confederacy of the kings of Babylon, right? Those are the kings, right? Then you have the children of the Nephilim. I say the children of Nephilim, I don't even bother with Saddam or Gomorrah, Sodom and Gomorrah and Bara and all them, because the real power was the Nephilim, okay? This is why Sodom and Gomorrah thought that they were well protected, because they had the Nephilim on their side, right? And then you had the followers of Yahuwah, led by Abram and Melchizedek. It's very important, Melchizedek. When you read chapter 14, you find good and evil intertwined. The kings of Babylon on one side and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah on the other. And in the midst of them, you have Abram, Melchizedek, and the Nephilim between two demonic powers. And we notice that the Nephilim chose the side of Sodom and Gomorrah. In the midst of the order of Melchizedek, which was in Salem. Okay? Let me read it. Let me say that again. We notice that the Nephilim, they chose the side of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's who they decided to align themselves with. Right? But in the midst of that, you had the order of Melchizedek, right? This was in Salem before it became Jerusalem, right? Means peace. This is the priest of righteousness, or the king of righteousness, the king of peace was there. Then we read that the kings of Babylon conquered the most powerful beings on earth, but they make one mistake. They took the nephew of Abram. And it took only 318 men to defeat the kings that conquered the nation of giants. Now, why is that, and how was that possible? Okay. Now, there's a lot here, but for the sake of time, I will keep it moving. But I will tell you that after reading the complete Dead Sea Scrolls, right, by it's called Giza Vermis. These are the Dead Sea Scrolls. I advise anybody that wants to get deeper into the word to buy that book. And then there's another book that's not as well known as that one. It's called The Ancient Mysteries of Melchizedek by Melchizedek Y. Lewis. Okay? The Ancient Mysteries of Melchizedek by Melchizedek Y. Lewis. Okay? Now, My mind received a deeper understanding concerning these events. Now keep in mind, after reading those books, my mind received a deeper understanding. Now keep in mind, after the battle, we read, and it says, and he gave him tithes of all. Now, when you read other Bibles, you see that Abram gave Melchizedek 1/10 of the spoils. When, what this means is that Melchizedek, king of Salem, right? He was Abram's priest, which is why Yahuwah tells Abram to go back into Jerusalem again, right? And clear it of the Nephilim. He has to clear the Nephilim out again. And then the area becomes the promised land. Okay? We also read this in the book of Hebrews. I hope I'm not confusing everybody. I want people to understand there's a reason why we have the next, what I'm going to read to conclude, but I'm setting it up for that, okay? It's about these Nephilim. It's about the blue blood, right? It's about the promised land. It's about all of this is going on because there's a deeper meaning behind that. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, is very important in this, okay? We also read this in the book of Hebrews. The priestly order of Melchizedek, Hebrews chapter 7, verse 1 through 9. Okay, and it reads, For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High Elohim, who met Abram returning from the slaughter of the kings, and blessed him, to whom also Abram gave 1/10 part of all, first being by interpreted king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither being beginning of days nor end of days, but made like unto the son of Yahuwah, abideth a priestly priest continually. Now, there's a reason why that is, and it gets deep, okay? You can find this in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, this area was chosen because the area in which the promised land was chosen because Melchizedek, king of Salem, was the first priest of the order of Melchizedek, who was located in present-day Jerusalem, which was the source of Abram's power. Now, to get a deeper understanding, I'm going to go to the Hebrew root of the words in chapter 14. I will do this by using the Strong's Concordance. Okay, and I always do this. If anybody's familiar with how I study, I always go to the Strong Concordance. I break it down to the root. And then when I have time, I even take it into the Paleo Hebrew. And then we start to look at how what it meant and how it relates to the actual words in the Strong Concordance. But we won't get that deep because we don't have a lot of time. But we have plenty of time, but I don't want to draw this out, okay? Now, in the book of Genesis, chapter 14, there is a peculiar event that happens when the order of Melchizedek is being represented, okay? It is when the order of Melchizedek is being represented. Now it reads, when you translate the Most High God in the Strong's, you get Hebrews 5:9-7, which is an elevation, that is an adjective, lofty, comparative, as title, the supreme, most, on high, or highest, uppermost, and it is pronounced Elyon, okay? The word God, Hebrews 4:10, shortened for Hebrews 3:5-2, strength as adjective, mighty, especially the Almighty, but used as of any deity. God, ex godly, ex great, idol, mighty, Y1, power, strong. Compared names in L is L. Therefore, the Most High God is translated to Elyon El. Okay, so when they say the Most High God, they're saying Elyon El. But what's interesting is that is a phrase that's particularly used in this moment by Melchizedek, which is very interesting. Okay? Elyon El, which means Melchizedek was a priest of Elyon El. You say, what do you mean? All right, now let me keep going. Melchizedek was a priest of Elyon El, so the question is, who is Elyon El? Now, this is according to the Dead Sea Scrolls, Elyon El is the Prince of Light, who is the Archangel Michael, whom is also called Melchizedek. Melchizedek is Archangel Michael. Who is this? This is the commander in chief of war, which is why the tribe of Levi, through the seed of Aaron, became the priest of the Most High. They carry the baton, right? This is powerful. This is powerful. Which is why Abram gave 1/10 of the spoils to Melchizedek. And then we read Abram saying to the kings of Sodom, he says this to the king, keep your blessings, right? First, he gives a portion to Melchizedek, but then he gives it all back. He goes, I don't even want none of this. Keep it. Keep your blessings. I will not take from the thread even to a shoelace, because I have left it. I have lifted up mine hand unto, now listen to this, Yahuwah El Elyon. Elyon El. Right? Now, this is amazing, because Elyon El is a title given to Michael, right? The head, the powerful warrior Elohim, the king, the spirit, the deity, right? But when Abram says it, he's being specific. He says, Lord, Elyon El. But when you translate Lord, it says Yahuwah, right? Or Jehovah, right? But it says Yahuwah Elyon El. Because Michael is there, but he is lower, of course, right, than the maker. And the maker is Ayah, Yahuwah, who makes all. But he's in the same house. In that particular house, the order of Melchizedek is the same order that the Essenes were, Yahshua. All right? Now, it says, I have lifted up my hands unto Yahuwah Elyon El, the possessor of heaven and earth. He says the same thing that Melchizedek says, but he added Yahuwah Elyon El, the possessor of heaven and earth. Now, because we are getting translated material passed down and filtered by the usurpers, by the blue bloods and deceivers, it is difficult to distinguish between Elyon El of Baal or Elyon El of Archangel Michael. Keep in mind, this has been a debate in the biblical intellectual circles for a long time, because a lot of people are saying, well, this Elyon El, is this really that of Yahuwah, or is this Elyon El another entity? But understand that it's actually a translation in the meaning of a title, but when it's referred to Melchizedek, it's talking about Archangel Michael, okay? Now let's read the next chapter and see if this will make things clear. Let's read Genesis 15, verse 1 through 22. It is called God's Covenant with Abram. And after these things, the word of the Lord, I'm just going to read it how it was written. After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceedingly great reward. And Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless? And the steward of my house is this Eleazar of Damascus. Okay, now before I continue, I will place the correct names in the place of Lord and God. Now, what's interesting is when you read the revised names, the King James Bible used the Strong's Concordance, you can clearly see that they use a completely different meaning of God compared to the chapter in Melchizedek. So as Melchizedek speaking about Elyon and El and Lord and God, even the word God, they change that meaning. When you go back to the root, there's two different types of gods used. Very, very, that's why you have to read this with the Strong's Concordance, and it takes time, but then you'll get a deeper meaning. Now, this word Lord in the Strong's is Hebrews 3:06-8, which means Yahuwah, which comes from the root word Hebrews 1:9-6:1, which is Ayah, or I am that I am. Ayah, which is a name revealed to Moses, meaning I am that I am, right? We also see where it says, And Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless? These two words, Lord, is Hebrews 1:36, which is Adonia, an emphatic form of Hebrews 1:13, the Lord used as a proper name of God only, my Lord. And we have the word God, which is Hebrews 3:06-9, and mind you now, just Hebrews 3:06-9 and Hebrews 3:06-8. Hebrews 3:06-8 is Yahuwah, right? Hebrews 3:06-9 is Yahweh. Yahuwah, Yahweh. Yahuwah, Yahweh. A variation of Hebrews 3:06-8, Yahuwah, used after Hebrews 1:36 and pronounced by Jews as Hebrews 4:30, Elohim. in order to present the in order to prevent the repetition of the same sound, since they elsewhere pronounce Hebrews 30:68, like I said, Yahuwah, as Hebrews 1:36, Adonia. So Adonia, Yahuwah, Elohim, Yahweh, means the same thing, but differently. But when you use Elohim and Yahweh, you're speaking about the entities, right? When you speak, when you go to Adonia Yahuwah, you're speaking about Ayah, the name of Ayah, right? Distinct. This is what I'm speaking about. No confusion. Okay. Now, that was a lot to comprehend, but you have to know what you are reading in order to get the deeper meaning. El comes from Elohim. El is a deity or an idol. Elohim can be a very powerful angel like Archangel Michael, or a ruler or a judge. It is also used for lower gods like Baal. Just understand that it signifies powerful spirits or entities. For example, the fallen angels. However, when Elohim El is used in relation to Yahweh or Yahweh, it is saying Ayah, the powerful ruler, the top king of kings, lord of lords, right? When you use Yahweh, you're saying Ayah, the lord of lords, okay? Yahweh, and when you see Yahuwah, it is the name of our creator, I am that I am. I am God, the creator of all, the creator of all life. That is Yahuwah, all right? There's small variations, but there's different meanings when you say it. And as I do a study on the different names and how it's used and the different meanings, these things start to come into understanding, like, okay, when I say Yahuwah, it means this. When I say Yahweh, it means that. Okay? Now, the confusion comes between Yahweh. And a lot of people get like, what do you mean Yahweh? Now, I don't want to insult anybody. Like I said, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings or make anybody upset. This is just what I found, okay? The confusion comes between Yahweh and Yahuwah. There's a different added, you know, addition to Yahweh. They sound the same, but they are different because the Elohim, when saying the name Yahweh, can also be the El of the earth and demonic spirits, the lowercase gods, but powerful rulers of darkness. Now, this is just history, right? These are Canaanite gods, the Enki, the Anunnaki. The Elohim, in this context, is El, right? Baal, Anath, and they worship Baal, whom is also called Yahweh. That's the history, right? Now, there's a reason why they called their God Yahweh as well, which is why some of the Jews called like Ayah Yahweh, okay? Because during this time, the Canaanites became integrated into the Hebrew culture. In other words, they became Jews. They're like the first converts into Judaism. This process is called conflation and amalgamation, as it reads from the Britannica, all right? This is in the Britannica, which explains that a little bit better, I hope. It says, Canaanite religion, beliefs, and practices were prevalent in ancient Palestine and Syria, the same place that we were called the Promised Land. During the second and first millennium BC, centering primarily in the deities El, Baal, and Anath, right? From time to time, it subverted the essential monotheism of the Israelites after they occupied Canaan, the promised land of the Old Testament, all right? They're saying they were so closely intertwined that the names of the gods would mean the same thing but different, but it would be the same name that you would use, but that name would actually mean that god instead of that god, okay? Now, is this like when you say God, and people can mean the God of Satan, or if you say God, it means God of the creator of the universe. But because you're saying God, you don't know which one they mean, okay? Now, I wanted to explain this before I continue to further underline why Yahuwah made the covenant with Abram. This was the land of Canaan, the promised land, but the fallen angels had it captured, and it was in possession of the kings of Babylon. Archangel Michael, whom is called Melchizedek, was a powerful deity who was also called the possessor of heaven and earth, because he was the priest. He was the priesthood of righteousness, which eventually was passed to the Levitical priest, which is why they were chosen to clear the land of the giants, also known as the Nephilim, who were the seed of the fallen angels. Okay, now I hope you are starting to get the picture. I hope I didn't confuse you. You can always listen to this again. I'm going to have this transcripts online so you can read through the transcripts. You can do your own study and actually see where I got this information from, okay? Next, we will read chapter 15, verse 1 through 21 to complete this this message. I'm going to take a quick break, get some water, and then finish up. Okay, I will be right back. Okay, welcome back. Thank you so much for sticking with me this long, if you were able to listen to this whole message. We all were following along so we can get to this point, which is God's covenant with Abram. And this is what I'm going to read. And hopefully it makes more sense as I conclude this message. And this is God's covenant with Abram. And this is from Genesis 15. And this is verses 1 through 21. Okay? And it reads, "And after these things, the word of Yahuwah came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceedingly great reward. And Abram said, Adonijah, Yahweh, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless? And the steward of my house is this Eleazar of Damascus. And Abram said, Behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir. And behold, the word of Yahuwah came unto him, saying, This shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad, and said, Look now towards heaven, and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. And he believed in Yahuwah, and he counted to him for righteousness. And he said unto him, I am Yahuwah, that bought thee out of Ur of Chaldeans, to give thee this land to inherit it. And he said, Adonijah, Yahweh, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And he said unto him, Take me a heifer of 3 years old, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took unto him all these, and divided them in the midst, and laid each piece one against another. But the birds divided him not. And when the fowls came down upon the carcass, Abram drove them away. And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram. And lo, a horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Abram, Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom thou shalt serve will I judge, and afterwards shall thou come out with great substance. and thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age, but in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquities of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. In the same day, Yahuwah made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the river, the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites and the Kenzites and the Kutumites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Rephaims and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Girgashites and the Jebusites. Okay? Now I wanted to read that straight through without pausing. Okay? But now, did you hear, right? Your ears should now recognize the names that I emphasized. You can now recognize that these names are the children of the Nephilim. Okay? And before we close this message, I want you to meditate on the names in the land that Yahuwah promised to the seed of Abram. Now, for the sake of time, I will focus on only a few names. But before I do, I'm going to tell you that the next broadcast, we're actually going to go over the prophecy, the 400-year prophecy. Many don't know, but that 400-year prophecy actually was from the time that the colonizers colonized into the time of freedom. The Hebrews of the seed of Jacob are in many different places, mainly the United States of America. So those 400 years ended in different times. Some was 2020, some 2019, right? And we can coordinate that effort, and that's why there's the speaking of reparations, and that's why there all these nations are falling. But I'm not going to get into that now, because I want to close this one out and save something for the next one. But like I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over the different nations that we heard in this closing. And the first one, I'm just going to take a few from, we're going to look at the Britannica, and we're looking at the Kenites. And it says, the Kenites, an ancient people, member of a tribe of a tribe of metals smith, related to the Midianites and the Israelites, who plied their trade while traveling in the region of Arba, the desert rift valleys extended from the Sea of Galilee, right, to the Gulf of Cuba, for at least the 13th century to the 9th century BC. The Canaanites, with a K, Canaanites, name was derived from Cain, whose descendant they were believed to be. The Kenites are mentioned several times in the Old Testament. Remember? The Amalekites, the seed of the serpent, right? The Amalekites and seed of the serpent. Remember, I did a broadcast and talks about the Kenites and the real meaning behind the name, the real meaning behind the apple and what it was. That's a very important study that I believe that you should look at. Okay. Now, did you hear that? The tribe goes back to the 13th century. Think about 13th century. 1300 years back, right? BC, which means they go back to the fallen angels. Cain went into the land of Nod, and somehow his offspring are in the promised land. See, Cain's offspring are in the promised land. Now let's look at the Rephaims. This is from Wikipedia. It says, according to Wikipedia and the Hebrew Bible and other ancient Near East texts, the Northeast Semitic term Raphite or Rephim, plural in Hebrew, Romanized, Ugrit, Phoenician, Romanized, refers either to a people of greater than average height and stature, as derived in Deuteronomy 2:10-11, this is when what we're going to read later, to departed spirits in the afterlife dwelt in Shiloh, as reference to Isaiah 24:14 and Psalms 88:10, Proverbs 9:18, and Isaiah 14:9. You can look those up to get a deeper understanding. And it also reads, the Rephaims are also known as the Nephilim. As it reads from Wikipedia, the Nephilim are mysterious beings of people in the Bible traditionally imagined as being of great size and strength, and alternatively beings of great power and authority. The origins of the Nephilim are disputed. Some include the author of the Book of Enoch, view them as the offspring of rebellious angels and humans. Others view them as descendants of Seth and Cain. So there we have Cain connected again with the Nephilim. Okay. The reference to them in Genesis 6, 1 through 4, but the passage is ambiguous and the identity of the Nephilim is disputed. According to the Numbers 13:33, 10 of the 12 spies reported that the Nephilim, that the existence of Nephilim in Canaan prior to its conquest by the Israelites, because they had to clean them out. Now, what's interesting, when I search for the Nephilim in the Britannica, it takes me to Moloch. Okay, now when I say, okay, let me see what the Britannica says about this, instead of me giving me the examples of the giants, this is what it reads. It says Moloch. It comes with Moloch, right? So now the Britannica is making a connection between the Rephaims, the Nephilim, and Moloch. It says a Canaanite deity associated in biblical sources with the practice of child sacrifice. What's going on right now? 325,000 children are missing in the United States. Think about that. 325,000 children are missing in the United States. How much abortions are in the United States? This is Moloch, right? The Nephilim are still around. These demonic entities are still around. All right. I did a broadcast the other day about Moloch, and they won't even give it the time of day. They keep it at 30 views. Been out for months. Just they keep it down at 30 views. They don't want nobody to know about Moloch. Okay. And it's interesting how Moloch now is, a huge connection to the study that I'm doing. And I didn't even know that. Well, I knew it, but I didn't know that they was going to come up as the main focus when it comes to the Rephaims, which is the focus in which the Hebrews are supposed to clean out the land, which now tells us that Moloch, that deity, exists. That's probably most likely who they worship. The others, the ones that created the coup, which is why 325,000 children are missing in America in 1 year. Okay? Now, a Canaanite deity associated in biblical sources with the practice of child sacrifice. The name derives from combining the consonants of the Hebrew Moloch, see, Malachi, Malach, king, with the vowels of Bushah, shame, the latter often being used in Old Testament as a variant of name for the popular god Baal. So there's Baal again, right? Now we have Malachi, Melchizedek, who is the king of righteousness. Then you have Malek Bosheth, which is the king of shame, which is the opposite, right? King of truth versus the king of shame, right? Then they said, translate as a variant name for the popular god Baal, which is Lord. That's why they said we're not supposed to. They said, don't use Lord in the Bible. But then when you go to the translation, Lord means Yahuwah, but also Lord can mean Baal. So you got to know what you're reading. In the Hebrew Bible, Moloch is presented as a foreign deity who was at a time illegitimately given a place in Israelis' worship as a result of sarcastic policies of certain apostate kings. The law given to Moses by God expressly forbid the Jews to do what was done, the 100 and 216 words. All right, now that's what it says about the definition of mullet. And like I said, did you hear that? The Raphims are indeed the Nephilim, the offspring of the fallen angels. Reflect on, like I said, I want you to reflect on the missing children today, the abortions taking place, and the Hebrews sacrificing their children to Moloch. Because most of the people, most of the tribes, most of the race of people that are giving their children up to Moloch, unfortunately, are the African-American women, right? And the African-American women are the Hebrews. Here the Hebrews are again, giving their children to Moloch through abortions. Hello? Hebrews sacrificing their children to Moloch. The Canaanite worship Moloch, who is Baal. The Raphims are also connected to the Kenites through Cain and Seth. And as I mentioned, their descendants are presented in the promised land today. We know this because the connection between the brotherhood and the Nephilim, the bloodlines and the monarchs, right? Now, who do you think took the place of Melchizedek, the king of Salem, after the kings of Sodom were restored? Because what's been going on in the Middle East is a restoration of what Ayah removed. It's a restoration of what Ayah removed. This next removing is going to be done by the Ancient of Days. Now, in the future, I will do a detailed breakdown of the different tribes that Moses and Yahshua, the son of Nun, cleared out of the promised land. But keep this in mind, the covenant was made so that the seed of Abraham would keep these demonic entities in check. This was the very purpose of the covenant and why the seed of Jacob inherited the promised land. Today, the state of Israel has fallen back into the hands of the Nephilim. But Revelations foretells that it will be restored to its rightful people. Now, I will close in prayer. Thank you so much for listening. And the prayer in the name of Yahshua, Ayah, Yahuwah, Yahweh. Thank you for this message. I ask that you bless the minds and ears that hear it. I ask that if I erred in any part, that you forgive me of my ignorance and guide me more towards improvements. I ask that you keep my words from becoming a stumbling block, but make them into building blocks or building blocks for bridges that can bring people together. I ask that you give us wisdom in these end of days. I ask that you give us guidance in these ends of days. I ask that you give your remnant prosperity to make a path for the next generation. Thank you, Ayah, for your love and patience. Thank you for your protection and grace. Thank you for your gift to us all, Yahshua, the Messiah. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Hallelujah. All right. Thank you so much. The next broadcast is going to be called The Great Dream, Pawns of the Monarch, Part 2. All right. Thank you for listening.